This paid program may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. The federal government invests billions in information technology each year to help agencies accomplish their missions. IT has the potential to enable federal agencies to do this more effectively and efficiently. However, fully exploiting the potential has presented longstanding challenges to agencies. These challenges have not decreased over the past year, and many federal agency CIOs are responding by focusing on the enterprise and by coordinating across boundaries. The U.S. Department of Commerce has sought to do just this. Commerce's leadership has worked together to successfully tackle one of the most significant challenges facing senior IT leadership, the requirement for greater empowerment and decision-making to drive efficiencies and improve effectiveness of IT. What is the information technology strategy of the U.S. Department of Commerce? How has Commerce changed the way it does IT? And what is Commerce doing to ensure its IT investments are aligned with its mission? We'll explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Dr. Simone Zeichman, Chief Information Officer at the U.S. Department of Commerce. Simone, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Thanks.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Paul Kayada. Paul, welcome.
Thank you, Michael.
So, Simone, could you tell us a little bit about your role within the U.S. Department of Commerce as Chief Information Officer? What are the responsibilities and duties under your purview, and how does your office support the overall mission of Commerce?
The Department of Commerce is one of those federated agencies. We have about a dozen bureaus or component sub-agencies that have all missions relating to commerce but different from one another. So my role is not one of managing the operational IT infrastructure across the entire department. That's typically done at the bureau level, although my office does support operationally a couple of the smaller bureaus. But my role is principally one of providing strategic direction and leadership for the Department of Commerce, working a variety of initiatives or issues that are relevant department-wide, some of our savings initiatives that are department-wide, some of our shared services initiatives, working with OMB on government-wide initiatives and their implementation at Commerce, as well as development of policy and conducting oversight for the IT investments at the Department of Commerce. From an operational perspective, we do support, as I mentioned, a couple of the small bureaus in the headquarters building, as well as the Office of the Secretary. But from an implementational perspective, those are relatively smaller scale operations.
Mm-hmm. How is your office organized?
I have two deputy chief information officers. One is focused on management and business operations. The second one serves as our chief technology officer. We also have a chief information security officer who is responsible for cybersecurity policy, compliance, strategy, and providing direction for cybersecurity across the department.
And I was wondering, could you tell us what the three top challenges you face and how have you sought to address them?
The challenges that I've been dealing with have been largely the same since I started in my position about almost 4 years ago now. The first of them is cybersecurity. That's been an area of historically an area of weakness at the Department of Commerce. There's been a lot of improvement over the past 3 to 5 years, significant improvement even over the past couple of years, but we still have work to be done. And it's been an area of high priority for quite some time. The second area is the challenge of dealing in this fiscal climate with the budgetary pressures that everybody is into and how we're dealing with the need to identify opportunities for cost savings, efficiencies, while still maintaining the quality and effectiveness of our services. And the third is focused on really improving the operational quality of delivery of our services.
I'm sure with those challenges and others, you can have your fair share of unanticipated or unexpected surprises. So to that end, what would you say has surprised you most since you've started in position?
So I have to say I had, through some good fortune, I guess, not a lot of big surprises at the Department of Commerce. And I think one of the main reasons for that is before moving up to take the role of department CIO, I was the CIO at the National Institute of Standards and Technology, which is one of the commerce bureaus. So I had already been working internally to commerce from the bureau level, working at the Commerce CIO Council level, knew the players, knew the culture, knew the organization of the department. And that familiarity, I think, helped not only avoid surprises, but I think when I moved up to the department level, it also helped me work better with my peers and counterparts because first I had already developed relationships with some of the key people. And I think the fact that I had worked at the bureau level before moving to the department level helped build a certain level of trust with other bureau CIOs because they knew that I had been in their chair at one point and could relate to the kinds of concerns and issues that they had to deal with.
So, Simone, I want to get your impressions and insights on the key trends in federal IT today.
Well, I would say some of the key trends really are driven by policy. Things like the emphasis we've seen over the past few years on data center consolidation, cloud computing, shared services, mobility, open data. But some of those trends that I just mentioned are, in a sense, purely policy trends, things like open data, open government. But some of them are really riding the tail of technology trends and, in some cases, consumer technology trends. Things like cloud computing is an area where the private sector had been moving more aggressively and earlier than the federal government had. Certainly mobility is something that's frequently, if not very often, driven by consumer mobile technologies and the kinds of devices that people have in their pockets, you know, from a personal basis, not just from a need to support their official work.
So given your experience and coupled with the trends and the challenges you're dealing with, I'd like to understand, in your mind, what is the characteristics of an effective leader? And in a sense, has the concept of leadership needed to shift because we're living in an increasing networked world?
You know, in one sense, I think the general qualities of an effective technology leader are pretty generic. An ability to think strategically, articulate a vision, being a good communicator and consensus builder. Those types of qualities, I think, are generic enough that they're not really relevant in a direct way to the fact that we live in a networked world. In terms of being leader for IT strategy, I think some of the shifts in these trends are different from in the past in the sense that it used to be that what people had in the way of technology was really internally driven and not as much driven by consumer technologies or commercial trends. It was really the government deciding what it needed and acquiring it. And nowadays that is changing with these new technology trends. So I think there's just a need to be agile and more adaptive in terms of following and anticipating the trends that are out there commercially and also being much more customer focused, whether it's looking at your individual users as customers of your services or more mission-centric and understanding what the mission delivery folks in the bureaus or in the agency need from an IT perspective to deliver on their mission.
Simone, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, some of your background, your career path?
Yes, I've taken, I would say, a non-traditional path to get to where I am today. Many of the people who I've seen working in CIO organizations are people who have started out in CIO organizations and moved up the ladder, advanced over their careers. My background is actually a little bit more zigzaggy than that. Prior to being the Commerce CIO, I was the CIO at NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology. But that was my first position in any CIO organization. My role before that was working in a variety of different capacities. My first position working in the federal government was also at NIST, but not in the CIO organization. I was a researcher at NIST and started out my government career doing research. From there, I had a really great opportunity to take a detailed assignment working at the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy. And so I spent about a year and a half there doing IT-related policy work in a variety of areas, including government-wide IT research and development, high-performance computing, cybersecurity. That was right around the time when, under the prior administration, the first national strategy to secure cyberspace was being developed within the White House. From there, I moved on to the Department of Homeland Security and was their first director of cybersecurity R&D. So I helped not just manage but really develop from scratch the portfolio of cybersecurity R&D programs at the Department of Homeland Security. Then I moved back to the Office of Science and Technology Policy and was involved in running an office that supported interagency coordination for IT research and development. They didn't do research or fund research, but they did all of the interagency coordination and policy support for government-wide IT research and development. So all of those things that I was involved with before I got into the CIO world, I feel like, just speaking from my own path, have made me sort of a well-rounded person that has a set of perspectives that not everybody might have. I've worked research, so I understand the idea of cutting edge and sort of beyond the state of the art types of technologies and how you can transition requirements for things that don't exist into actual practice. I also mentioned I've been involved in policy development, and I think that's very important because not every problem in the IT world is a technology problem. And so certainly understanding policy and how policy is made and how to do that effectively is important. Working two different assignments in the White House certainly exposes you to the political world, and having a better understanding of how to manage sort of the political aspects of decision making is also something that is, at least for me, has been valuable in several of the positions I had since then.
What is the information technology strategy at the U.S. Department of Commerce? We will ask Dr. Simone Zeichman, Chief Information Officer at Commerce, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. How can DoD improve its acquisition processes? Check out the latest IBM Center report, 8 Actions to Improve Defense Acquisition. The authors emphasize the urgency of acquisition reform in DoD, given budgetary constraints and security challenges, finding that DoD will need to gain every possible efficiency while resisting the temptation to buy defense on the cheap. This report continues the IBM Center's interest in better understanding and improving the federal government acquisition process. Download your free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dr. Simone Zeichman, Chief Information Officer at the U.S. Department of Commerce. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Paul Kayada. Simone, Commerce views information and technology as a strategic asset that it's both critical and pivotal in accomplishing its mission. To that end, would you tell us about your strategic vision, your strategic IT vision for the department?
Sure. And you're quite right in noting that IT is definitely a strategic asset for the department, and not IT solely from a technology perspective, but information more generally and data as well. If you look at the Department of Commerce IT spending, we're certainly not the largest agency, not the largest cabinet level agency, certainly. But if you look at the percentage of our spending that is spent on IT, we are quite high relative to most agencies. And that's because many of Commerce's missions do rely heavily on information and data, whether it's for climate modeling and weather prediction, or supporting innovation through the Patent and Trademark Office, the kind of research that goes on at the National Institute of Standards and Technology. The Census Bureau obviously deals with large amounts of data. People are familiar with the census that counts population, but there's also a lot of business-related census information. And the Department of Commerce also puts out economic statistics, the gross domestic product, and other types of statistics. So we rely very heavily on IT to support our mission components. But really for us, IT is the enabler. So what our real asset is the information and the data that we have, that we use, that we produce, and the products that we put out to support businesses and the general public.
So, Simone, as a follow-up, what are some of the key internal and external drivers and trends that shape and inform your strategic vision?
Well, clearly one of the internal drivers needs to be the department's higher-level strategy. The department over the past couple of months, more than a couple of months, has been working on developing a strategic plan for the Department of Commerce, and we're working quite fervently to align our department's IT strategic planning activities and enterprise architecture activities to support the department's strategic plan. One of the major components of the department's strategic vision is a much greater focus than in the past on data, the Department of Commerce's asset that I was just discussing earlier. So the idea for us is to look at the kinds of data that we have today that we aren't necessarily publishing and consider that as an untapped asset. What is it that we could put out there for the business community to use to create new products, to create new businesses, which ultimately would lead to job creation and help foster economic growth? What kind of data can we put out there to help businesses increase trade, which again has economic implications and is a key mission component for the Department of Commerce? So the strategic vision for the department as a whole and the importance of data within that strategic vision is one of the key drivers for much of what we're doing from a strategic level today in IT at the Department of Commerce. And then, of course, we also do have a variety of strategic drivers. Some of them are just technology trends in general, where the commercial market and consumer markets are going and how that's affecting the kinds of technologies that are available to support our mission, the kinds of technologies that people in the department want to be using, and the kinds of technologies that our external customers and stakeholders expect to see when they're interacting with the Department of Commerce. And, of course, we also have external drivers that are higher-level policies and mandates and directions that we're getting from the White House, the Office of Management and Budget, a variety of initiatives that the Office of Management and Budget is trying to drive across the entire federal government and that the Department of Commerce participates in.
With you controlling less than 2% of the department's IT spending and the rest managed at the bureaus, the IT mission support function within Commerce has followed a quite decentralized, more federated structure. Could you briefly describe some of the benefits and some of the limitations inherent in such an approach?
Sure. One of the clear benefits, speaking as somebody, as I mentioned previously, who has sat in the chair of a bureau-level CIO, is that you have, to some degree, a level of autonomy that helps you manage locally to suit the local needs and requirements of a bureau, a sub-agency within Commerce. And that is important because the different bureaus within Commerce do have missions that relate to commerce generally, but are not tightly linked to one another. So we have one agency that focuses on trade, one focuses on export controls, one focuses on spectrum management, one focuses on research and standards. And so these are different enough that in some cases there is a strong desire at the bureau level to have IT solutions, infrastructure, and services that are tailored to support the local needs. Obviously, the disadvantage is that that kind of a federated structure can lead to a lack of standardization, a very heterogeneous, decentralized environment. It can lead to some redundancy in services. So one of the things that we're working on right now is a service desk consolidation, because at one point, we've already started to consolidate, but at one point we had six different service desks because there were six independently managed organizations that ran their own IT services, when in principle you would like to think that maybe a smaller number, maybe even one service desk can support a population in one building, even if those people are in different organizations according to some org chart. Mm-hmm. And the other benefit to trying to build bridges across these federated organizations is the ability to look at some of our sourcing initiatives, how we buy technology. And certainly when you buy small amounts at a local level, you're not getting the same kind of pricing benefits that you can do if you aggregate purchasing across a large agency of about 47,000 people and do buying at a much larger scale, which allows you, again, to drive pricing down and save money for the taxpayers.
In 2012, you were charged by the department's senior leadership to develop, in consultation with the bureaus, an IT portfolio management policy. I'd like to explore the process involved in developing this and your reasons for doing it and maybe some of the actual process working with the bureaus and how that could be potentially viewed as an example of collaborative leadership.
Well, this definitely was a collaborative effort. This was not a policy that just hit people's desk and caught people by surprise. And there were a couple of important reasons for making it a collaborative effort. The development of that policy was led by me, but had participation from all of the CIOs at the bureau level at Commerce. One of the main reasons was obviously the desire to get buy-in in advance. Nobody likes to be hit in the face with a new policy that they weren't anticipating and perhaps don't agree with. And so this allowed everybody to have a voice in the development of that policy. It allowed them to provide feedback, recommendations for improvement, and certainly led to not only a policy that had that buy-in because it was communicated early, but in fact was strengthened by the kind of feedback and recommendations and suggestions we got from the broader community. The other reason for making that policy development a collaborative effort is that the policy was not intended solely to strengthen the department-level CIO's role. It was not one of these policies that really translates to a power grab. What it was something aimed at empowering the department-level CIO, but even CIOs at the bureau level, the desire to strengthen their roles, to manage their IT within their organizations more effectively, the desire to give them more visibility into what was going on even at the bureau level and more control over some of the IT decision-making at the bureau level was a key cornerstone of that policy. So the other reason for bringing in the broader community was really to get their input on how this policy could help them, not just how it could help the headquarters CIO.
So on that note, the Commerce Department has made lots of changes over the last year, delegating even more authority to 12 bureaus and to better manage their own IT portfolios, providing oversight from the department level. Would you elaborate on the efforts to strengthen the governance in the IT area?
Sure. The delegation of some of the authorities, not necessarily all of the authorities, but some of the authorities in that policy was aimed, as I mentioned previously, to strengthen the roles of the bureau-level CIOs within their own organizations. And there were situations where they may have perceived that they didn't have the level of visibility or control over decision-making within the bureau that they might have preferred, the reason for that being that a lot of the spending on IT actually takes place within the programs. It's not controlled 100% of every IT dollar under the direct control of the CIO at the bureau level. Sometimes there are programs that have IT that's supporting the programs on the mission side. So from a governance perspective, the delegations in this policy did enable CIOs to have more visibility within their organizations, but also to drive change more effectively. So some of the things that we've seen in some organizations is consolidation of IT staffing under the CIO. There may have been some people or some organizations that were providing IT functions that previously were not under the bureau-level CIO that have since been moved under the bureau-level CIO as a result of the policies or the provisions in this portfolio management policy. We've also seen changes in how performance is being managed. So there may have been people who were involved in IT on the mission side who now the CIOs have input into their performance plans, and that helps give them a little more control over what's going on within the agencies. We've also seen implementation of consolidation of infrastructure. We've seen, for example, within one of our bureaus, a large number of independently managed database servers were consolidated into a single server farm that now supports the bureau more broadly. And that consolidation creates economies of scale that makes the service as a whole much more cost effective. And we've also seen consolidation of services into shared service type environments. I talked earlier about the headquarters service desk consolidation that we've been working on, but we've seen similar consolidation of services in some of the larger bureaus where they're trying to become more efficient and improve their own service delivery through bureau-level service consolidation and shared services.
Simone, you've noted that IT portfolio at a large government agency is really not a portfolio, but more of a portfolio of portfolios. To that end, would you distinguish between commodity IT and mission IT? And why? What's the benefit of looking at things that way?
Well, I think there certainly is value to making the distinction. The reason is, speaking practically, my organization doesn't have enough staff to manage every single dollar that's being spent at the Department of Commerce, but more importantly, we don't necessarily have the expertise to manage every single dollar that's being spent. We have some very sophisticated, I would say, unique types of technologies in some cases, maybe if not unique, at least unique to single bureaus. For example, the National Weather Service has supercomputers that they use for weather modeling and climate prediction. There are also some supercomputing capabilities that NIST used for research, but that's not a generic capability that's common to every organization at the department. And so we, although in some organizations something like that might be viewed as a commodity capability, in commerce it's not. It's really used to meet local needs in a small number of organizations. And since my perspective really is on focusing on things that are department-wide, supercomputers is not something that I would spend a lot of my time and effort focusing on. Another example is the satellite ground systems that are used to manage the satellites that do observation of the Earth for gathering data that's used for weather modeling and weather prediction. That, too, is a very unique type of capability that requires a lot of subject matter expertise. And my organization doesn't have any expertise in satellites. And so it wouldn't make sense for us to pull that up to manage at the department level. So when the way we look at commodity IT is, what are the types of technologies, whether it's buying hardware or software or whether it's services, that are common to most organizations, or maybe in some cases even all organizations? What are the things that are least likely to be viewed as unique to local context? So, for example, email. It's not likely that one bureau is going to claim that their email requirements are so different from another bureau's that there's no way that they could sort of collaborate either on contracting or integrating, consolidating services. And we have similar things that we try to do with infrastructure. Some infrastructure is very unique. Some of it is very generic. And so our view on commodity IT is really, what are the things that are generic across multiple organizations, not very specific to any one particular organization? And from my perspective, those are the opportunities where if multiple organizations are using a capability, technology, hardware, software, infrastructure, can we consolidate the infrastructure and operate it more cost effectively? Can we consolidate the contracting and purchasing and buy it in larger quantity and get better pricing? Are there ways of integrating services? So we reduce the number of service providers and obviously some of the redundant support for those services and improve, again, the effectiveness of our spending. So that's really how we look at commodity IT versus non-commodity IT. But there are certainly some gray areas, and it probably is not the most fruitful use of people's time to really spend a lot of time coming up with what the exact definition is, because I think there is no one right answer for what is or isn't commodity IT.
What is Commerce doing to ensure its IT investments align with its overall mission? We will ask Dr. Simone Zeichman, Chief Information Officer at the U.S. Department of Commerce, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. Government leaders and managers face major challenges today, including fiscal austerity, citizen expectation, the pace of technology and innovation, and a new role for governance. These challenges influence how government executives lead today, but more importantly, how they can be prepared for tomorrow. The IBM Center report, Six Trends Driving Change in Government, offers a path forward for government executives responding to the ever-increasing complexity and challenges they face today. Download your free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dr. Simone Zeichman, Chief Information Officer at the U.S. Department of Commerce. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Paul Kayada. So, Simone, Commerce has an inherent responsibility, like most federal agency, to be good stewards of the public funds and invest its budget wisely. What have you done to strengthen the department's IT capital investment process to ensure that the investment decisions are mission-aligned and cost-justified?
We've made quite a number of improvements. The department under Klinger Cohen has had a capital planning and investment control process for a long time. Also under the Klinger Cohen Act, we've had a Commerce IT Review Board for many years, and that board had historically been used to review the major investments at the Department of Commerce. And that's still the case, but we've been significantly improving the processes, how the board operates, how it's structured, what it does, and the mechanisms that we use to improve the overall oversight that we're providing for capital planning and capital investment at Commerce. So as an example, some of the improvements that we've made are sort of expanding the board and changing the composition of the board. In the past, the board was co-chaired by the CIO and the CFO of Commerce, and it still is, but members of the board had been primarily CIOs at the bureau level. And now we've expanded the board to also make sure that we have more frequent attendance, a representation by acquisitions organizations, budget organizations. We also have a new Office of Program Evaluation and Risk Management that was established within the past 2 or 2.5 years. So now we have a department-level risk management office that is also represented at these meetings. So that helps us understand, as part of our review process, risks and risk management associated with these major investments. We've also expanded the board to include more regular participation from the program management community. And that's not just the program managers of the investments that we're reviewing, but just generic subject matter experts, people who are skilled in program management, who come and help us do the assessment for these investments and make sure that they're being well managed. So our oversight capabilities have improved significantly. We also have, in addition to our overall oversight processes, the implementation of the IT dashboard by the Office of Management and Budget. And as part of the IT dashboard, which inventories all of the department's major investments, we're required to report a variety of information on a monthly basis, including CIO ratings for all these major investments. And that not only improves transparency for the general public, but has caused us to develop a new set of assessment criteria and assessment functions that result in us looking at all of the major investments on a monthly basis and doing an assessment of how they're performing. That, in turn, should lead to a reduction in risk and better performance for all of these projects.
As you've stated before, technology impacts everything within the department. So in this era of fiscal constraint, it must be imperative that mission support functions such as IT are pursued efficiently as well as effectively. To that end, could you elaborate a little bit on the efforts that Commerce is taking to pursue cost savings and efficiencies?
Sure. We have, I would say, several different classes of efforts. Some of them involve infrastructure consolidation. So you can imagine some of the things that we're doing under the government-wide data center consolidation initiative is resulting in consolidation of infrastructure, and by reducing the number of facilities and the number of data centers out there, we're producing some documented cost savings. Another area that I've already talked about in other examples previously are some of the things that we're doing with strategic sourcing, consolidating the acquisition and purchasing of technology, hardware, software, services to buy in larger quantity and drive costs down. And we've seen some significant improvements just as a result of some of these efforts. If you go back a couple of years ago, the Department of Commerce had over 100 contracts for buying PCs. Now with 12 bureaus, you can quickly do the math and see that 100 contracts, even within a single bureau, frequently they hadn't consolidated all their purchasing down to a single contract, but were still buying things in smaller quantities. We put in place a single strategic sourcing vehicle for buying PCs across the entire department, collapsed all that down to a single contract, and we're seeing something like 30 to 35% savings for every PC that we purchase. And we've been documenting these savings now for the past couple of years, and we've saved something in the order of $8.6 million just on PC purchasing solely by consolidating our purchasing to a single contract, not to mention the undocumented savings of all the people who used to be involved in managing these 100 contracts who now have better things to do with their time than manage a contract that somebody else is also managing. We've looked at our printing and developed a number of policies to reduce the cost of our printing, whether it's printing double-sided and black and white rather than single-sided in color. We've eliminated more desktop printers and put in place more efficient workgroup printers. We've been looking at our mobile phones and trying to move those to more, sort of consolidate those down to vehicles that give us better pricing. And we've also done purchasing of software ranging from Adobe software to endpoint protection software, again, consolidating our vehicles to get better pricing. And then the third area where we're really focusing on some cost savings is some of the shared services initiatives that we have. And so we're looking at putting in place, as I mentioned, help desk consolidation. In some cases, we're also looking at some network consolidation in the headquarters building. There are a variety of other shared services, more examples than I have to discuss here. But we are heavily focused on those three strategies for really trying to make better use of the funding that we have as a department.
So, Simone, we hear a lot about mobile computing and the perils and promises of mobile computing. I'd like to get a sense of what you folks are doing at Commerce to leverage this, and what are the different possibilities and demands around this, and how does your department-wide strategy for mobility factor in?
Well, the department-wide strategy for mobility is a lean strategy. And what I mean by that is I talked earlier about how the missions of the different parts of the department are quite different. So, and this also relates back to our earlier exchange about commodity IT. So there's some areas where some of the mobile technology that's in use really is commodity IT. There are some people who have BlackBerries and maybe would like to have an Android phone instead. There's some people who historically had laptops and maybe they'd like to have iPads or some other kind of tablet. And from that perspective, it's still supporting day-to-day type of work in a routine way. And so that is something that I might view as commodity IT. So we found ourselves in a situation where in order to support their local customers and these kinds of desires for mobile technologies and changes in technologies, the CIOs across the department were starting to pilot mobile technologies and mobility services. And my desire at the department level was really to not have a dozen brand new mushrooms sprouting, but to see if we could get together and work on a single approach to mobility within the department. And what that ultimately led to was a single contract for mobile device management services. So every bureau can still manage their own mobile devices. They can create their own enterprise services, but we have a single contract that everybody can use for acquiring mobile device management technology to support their needs. Again, the benefit there is we have a single standardized contract. We get better pricing as a result of the contract. If we ever in the future choose to consolidate the actual services themselves and maybe have one service provider supporting the whole department, that's much easier to do when people are already using the same technology base for doing that. So that's sort of been my role as a department-wide strategy. But then there are also bureau-level strategies for mobility, which may more directly support the mission of the bureau and the unique requirements of the bureau. An example there is the Census Bureau. They, every 10 years, go out and count the population of the country. And for the 2010 decennial census, they issued government-purchased laptops to every one of many, many tens or hundreds of thousands of temporary employees who were helping to conduct the census. They would like to reduce the cost of the census in the future for the 2020 decennial census. And so they're talking about a variety of options. Some of them are still being discussed, but one option might be to allow a BYOD type of approach. Another approach might be to look at virtual desktop infrastructure and really have the capability, the IT capabilities actually hosted in a data center, but through virtual desktops, allow all of the distributed census takers in the field to have access to the IT they need. And these capabilities could, in fact, be combined. So you could have virtual desktops providing computing capability in the data center and have people using their personal devices to access those virtual desktops. So that would sort of combine the VDI in the data center capability with a BYOD mobile device capability. And so what they're trying to do is really focus on how to make the decennial census a more successful census and a less expensive census than the ones that we had in the past. And that's not a mission that other bureaus share. And so the types of strategies that they're focusing on to meet their particular needs are unique to census. And so that's an example of where we have a bureau-level strategy that really goes quite a bit further to help the mission delivery and mission support than what the department-level strategy does.
Simone, throughout our conversation, here's a follow-up that we've mentioned 12 bureaus. We've mentioned the federated model of IT within your department. I want to get a sense of, if you could elaborate on, how do you go about being the facilitative leader that you need to be. So what is, when you're coming up with a policy with NOAA or with Census, how do you meet with the folks who are the IT executives over there? And what kind of, do you have a CIO council of sorts, or is it more informal?
We do. We have a CIO council that includes representation from the CIOs, all the CIOs within the department. And frankly, a lot of the work that needs to be done goes beyond just the CIO council, because many of the policies that we develop and implement don't affect only CIOs. They do affect the bureaus more broadly, whether it's the customer experience or from a security perspective, things that everybody and not just CIOs need to be involved with. So a lot of the discussion takes place within the Commerce CIO Council, but a lot of it takes place in other venues as well. We have a Commerce CFO Council. Obviously, many of the initiatives that we undertake, many of the policies that we develop have budgetary implications, and so we need to involve the CFO community. Some of the things that we want to do, we need to collect money from our internal organizations to be able to pay for, and that too, you can't just send somebody a bill unannounced. You have to explain to them what you're going to be billing for and get their support for doing it before we're able to do some of these things that have larger budget-type implications. We also have a Department Management Council, which is typically more senior-level career people, not CIOs and CFOs, but often people above them in one form or another. Some of them have a title of a chief or director for administration. Some of them are chief operating officers, but it's typically among the highest-level career people within the bureaus. And frequently, we collaborate with them on both getting input into our initiatives, but also getting support for our initiatives, particularly when we need to ask for money either internally or work through the federal budget process to do things.
One initiative I want to talk about is your efforts, and you identified this as a major challenge for your department, and as cybersecurity, it's a challenge for the whole federal government-wide issue. So what are you doing to protect the IT infrastructure and combat cybersecurity at the department?
Well, because the department's IT is very distributed, in some ways, management of security is distributed. And to some degree, that makes sense, because if I don't control a majority of the department's systems, then ultimately the people who should be accountable for ensuring that those systems are secure are the people who do control them. The people who have the funding to support those systems are the people who have to apply resources to ensure that they're being secured. The people whose direct mission is being supported by those systems are the people who should be accepting the risk associated with what is or is not secured in those systems. And risk acceptance is a big part of risk management and security for federal systems. So to some extent, it should be federated. What we try to do from a department-wide level is policy and oversight. A lot of what we do is collaborating across organizations to try to have uniform standards and minimum baselines and minimum requirements for security. And we also try to have, from a centralized level, better visibility into what's going on at the department, and also the ability to have a department-wide holistic view of the actual security status of the department, situational awareness. Mm-hmm. And that's something that in the past we didn't have because the department was highly decentralized. And so for me, as the department CIO, for example, to get a sense of how many machines across the entire department were patched, we would have to do a data call and put together a spreadsheet and email it to all the bureaus, and they would have to look internally and report back to us. We'd have to aggregate the information and look at it. And by the time all that happened, you know, it's at least a couple of weeks and the information is outdated by the time it's on your desk. So what we've been looking at doing now, in fact, what we're in the process of doing now, is following the more recent trend toward continuous monitoring and implementing that across the department as a whole. That's one thing that we're not implementing piecemeal, bureau by bureau, but we're implementing a department-wide infrastructure for continuous monitoring. It will help accelerate to almost near real-time the situational awareness and the reporting for things like patch status, vulnerability management, secure configuration management across the department. It will give me a more complete, a more comprehensive, a more accurate, and a much more rapid view into what the department's operational security state looks like.
What does the future hold for information technology within the U.S. Department of Commerce? We will ask its Chief Information Officer, Dr. Simone Zeifman.
when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. In a world inundated with all kinds of information, timely, relevant, and more predictive data can drive better decision-making. Law enforcement agencies are at the forefront in leveraging data and using innovative software to generate predictions that help police prevent crime. What is predictive policing? How can using analytics make us safer? Check out the IBM Center report, Predictive Policing, Preventing Crime with Data and Analytics by Jen Bochner, and find out. Download your free copy at businessofgovernment.org. What do agency leaders need to know about the federal acquisition process? What are some of the key federal procurement trends? And how can agency leaders overcome today's acquisition challenges? Check out the new Center report, A Guide for Agency Leaders on Federal Acquisition by Trevor Brown, and find out. The report offers practical recommendations for improving federal acquisition. Download your free copy of A Guide for Agency Leaders on Federal Acquisition at businessofgovernment.org and find out how the business of government is not business as usual. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dr. Simone Zeichman, Chief Information Officer at the U.S. Department of Commerce. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Paul Kayada.
I'd like to discuss open data and big data and what they mean for the Commerce Department. How are they the forefront of government tech policy, and to what extent do they represent the next phase of the technological revolution that you see within the government?
Well, open data and big data are two different things, and there aren't necessarily common definitions that everybody agrees on. So without getting into the details of what the definitions are, in my view, open data really focuses on how the government can more effectively make use of the data that it has. How can we use it ourselves better, but more importantly, how can we share it to either increase transparency, to provide more information to our stakeholders, constituents, citizens, both so that they understand what the government is doing, so that they can hold the government accountable for the use of taxpayer funds, but ideally so that they can use the data in new and novel ways that the government is not doing. I spoke earlier about the new strategic vision at the Department of Commerce, our strategic plan that's focusing on, among other things, data. What we'd like to be able to do is take the data products that the Commerce Department has and the data that we have and expand them significantly. Right now, we publish only a small portion of the data that we actually either collect or create ourselves, simply because these data collections are so large. If you're looking at weather data, we're talking literally petabytes of data per day that are being acquired, analyzed, and produced. But the idea being that by increasing the amount of data that we put out there, industry, individual citizens, companies might identify new ways of using this data, and that could lead to new jobs, new markets, new types of products. And so from our perspective, there may be ideas that the Commerce Department has that we don't have resources to pursue on what could be done with our data. And maybe by putting it out there, the private sector can do things with it. There may be areas where we might have ideas, but it's not our mission to do something. But maybe the private sector would create a new company around providing a service to citizens. And most importantly, we don't pretend that we've cornered the market on good ideas. And so if we just put data out there, there may be other people who are creative enough to come up with innovative ways to use the data for a variety of ways that can provide societal benefit or economic benefit to the country. Now, big data is a little bit different. Big data typically focuses on dealing with data in larger scales, whether it's moving data more quickly, whether it's a need to analyze data more quickly, whether it's vast amounts of data, just the basic quantity of data that's larger than typical. And so our mission as it relates to big data, again, is more linked to the mission delivery than it is to the kinds of commodity things that I'm involved with. The Census Bureau collects data on over 320 million households across the United States. And so you can imagine that they deal with large amounts of data. I just talked about NOAA and the National Weather Service. Just for the climate prediction and weather modeling, they deal with petabytes of data per day. NIST, in a variety of research capacity, deals with large data sets to support different aspects of their research mission. Patent and Trademark Office has documented patents going all the way back to the 1800s. So you can imagine that they deal with some pretty large sets of data as well. But how they use that data, the kinds of infrastructure that they need to support the mission relating to that data, does vary from one organization to another. And so our big data initiatives are typically linked to the mission. We don't have a single big data strategy or a big data initiative for the entire department, because the way big data is emerging from mission delivery and the way big data supports the mission varies from one organization to the next.
Simone, I have the pleasure of talking to many of our guests about collaboration and partnership among agencies and the private sector to achieve mission outcomes. Would you tell us about your efforts to leverage partnerships to improve IT outcomes?
Yes, we've been involved in a variety of partnerships. One of the things that I try to do frequently is just get out there and talk to people. And so if somebody were to Google my name, you'd see that I've been interviewed a frequent number of times, and even more frequently I'm on panels or giving talks, whether it's a keynote talk or serving as a panelist in a day-long or a multi-day workshop or conference. And part of the reason here is really to foster that kind of collaboration. I think it's an important part of my role to communicate to the private sector what it is that we do, where we're going, what our strategy is, what our priorities are, because ultimately that better enables the private sector to position themselves to meet our requirements in the most effective way, in the most cost-effective way. And so in my view, the communication between the government and the private sector is a key to allowing the private sector to support our mission, to support the kinds of things that we need from a technology perspective. There's also a fair bit of collaboration going on across agencies. Through the CIO Council is one of the principal mechanisms, but underneath the CIO Council, there's a shared services subcommittee that's now in place, and that shared services subcommittee is co-chaired by the CIO of NOAA, one of the Commerce Bureaus, and brings together representatives from a large number of different federal agencies to collaborate on shared services strategy, sharing of best practices, different types of models, exchanging information across agencies on how shared services are being implemented, how it's being done well, identifying opportunities for new shared services, trying to foster greater use of shared services across agencies and not solely within agencies. And that's just one example. There's another large focus on security and credentialing and identity management underneath the Federal CIO Council at the committee level. So there's quite a bit of collaboration, I would say, both between the government and the private sector and also across agencies on helping to improve IT management in general.
So given the critical role technology plays in the mission and delivery, how has the role of the CIO evolved to that of a trusted advisor? And what are the characteristics of a successful CIO?
Well, obviously, the role of the CIO has evolved a lot over the years. I mean, CIOs before the title of CIO even existed were information resource managers, and they were often viewed as the people who just kept the computers running. And I think the role of the CIO has certainly evolved into something that's much more strategic today. Many of the CIOs are as much business leaders and strategic thinkers as they are people who understand IT operations. And in fact, in my own case, I maybe would claim that I'm more of an operator at the strategic and business level than I am at the operations level, just based on my background and not having come up through the operations world in CIO organizations. So I think the real benefit, at least one of the real benefits that a CIO can bring to a large agency, is that trusted advisor. Who is it that's really going to help understand from a strategic level how IT can be used to better support the mission delivery, how to improve the experience for customers, whether those customers are internal agency users, whether they're stakeholders or users of government systems outside of the federal government. And that trusted advisor role, I think, is